Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, welcome, welcome. What an afternoon we're having here at Women of the World Festival in Hull. Ooh, we've got a thing on the stage. Is that okay? That's all known about. Just I shouldn't stand on it. Yes, that would be bad. Right, we won't do that. Welcome. I'm just going to give a few notes, if I may, steal a moment of your time before welcoming to the stage Gemma Kearney, hosted by the one and only Kofi Smiles. Quick ones. If you're expecting to see Kate Fox now, you're in the wrong place. So if you are expecting to see Kate Fox, please make your way to the Victoria Bar, where she's doing The Wrong Bits, her brand new show all about body image. After Gemma, we're going to be having some hula hooping. And I noticed that Chris Hees is back in the room for even more hula hooping, the star of hula hooping yesterday. And after hula hooping, unpublished, and for your eyes only, just this once today, the Ruby Reds will be returning to the stage at 3:15. And that's before we have our final session at 3:30 here in the room here, where we're wrapping up the session with Madeline O'Reilly, the programmer for the festival. And if you're here for that time, and only if you're here, will you be able to have the opportunity to take a piece of craftivism from the Revolutionary Makers installation, which you see all around us here on the columns, pinned to their beautiful red fabric. So the great Revolutionary Maker giveaway happens here at 3:30. Be here and get your piece of wow to take with you and give you inspiration forevermore. Madeline, our programmer, who I just mentioned, will be hosting a very special session in the Mortimer Room, that's through here, the room at the back of City Hall, called Imagining the Future. I think we've all had our minds open this weekend, and it's really important for all of us that the next generation of women, the next generation of mothers, and are inspired and are brought up as true feminists and able to achieve all of their own goals and their aims. There's a session with an extraordinary number of young people. So I think we've got about 8 young people joining us who will be telling it like it is, who will be sharing their thoughts and feelings and their aspirations for the future. A really important session, Imagining the Future. And that's happening in the Mortimer West Room. Immediately after the session with Gemma now. Gemma, after the session, will be signing her book. She might be talking about her book a little bit in the next hour, but she will be signing her book at Waterstone's pop-up bookshop in the information hall straight after the session. Right, enough of me, the main event. Please put your hands together and welcome to the stage Kofi Smiles and Gemma Kearney.
You're taking the short way around.
It's exciting. I have to note that WOW is in no way sponsored by Costa. I just really fancy the coffee, and I don't really advocate capitalism too much, but I needed a coffee.
Well, they've been working you very, very hard today, so you can be forgiven for that, I think.
It's been a crazy 3 days, Kofi, honestly. I feel like I'm living in a Spice Girls dream.
Yeah.
And it's so nice to share it with you, and I can't wait to tell you all about it. But there's been 3 launches for my book that has been from the southeast coast to London, then back to the southeast coast, and then to London again. And then last night, in a poof of smoke, I arrived here in Hull for my first time in Humberside. Yeah. So it's really fun.
Can we give it for Gemma for being here in Hull, please? All right, brilliant. So were you giving a talk yesterday? I know you definitely gave one this morning. How did that go? What was all that one about?
So yesterday I hosted the Young Women's Rally on the South Bank, which was a kind of free arm of WOW, because WOW is day passes at the South Bank Centre. But there's so much activity going around it, so you don't just have to buy a ticket. So I was hosting the Wowsers Rally. And Wowsers is the younger ambassadors that really love what WOW is about. So we had some girls down from WOW Bradford who were absolutely phenomenal doing speeches, young activists that I know in London, just coming together on an outdoor stage. I was comparing, trying to sort of connect the dots. There was an awesome band called Girls Rock London who helped us sing in the face of adversity, and we all like got together and realized that, yes, there is such thing as good music that's political, that's made now.
Yeah. So how you mentioned young activists. How young were they? Because I'm quite curious as to the age brackets of young women, well, it might be young boys as well, getting involved in the feminist movement.
At the rally, on like that lovely part of WOW, there were girls as young as 5
right.
who had taken part in workshops early on that day that was specialised for them, where they could hang out and be given placards and make their own banners for a women's march or with women's rights questions on, all, you know, covered in glitter and painted in rainbow colours, and they were so proud of their banners, and it was really inspiring for me to see that, you know, girls, and it's not just about girls, but like people under 10 years old care about equality in such a sort of buoyant and joyous sort of childlike way. That for me makes me excited about the future.
So where do you think that was coming from? Was that instilled to them by their parents? Is it maybe by what they're seeing online? Where is this kind of like need and wanting to get involved in this movement starting from?
I knew this was going to happen. This is my...
It's all right.
I'll take... It's my camera case rather than a bag, but now I'm totally trapped.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's all right.
I messed it all up.
It's okay. I'll just hum some like interval music.
Oh no, I've actually broken it. There we go. That's cool, isn't it? I'm such a professional. I've been broadcast for nearly a decade. Okay, so it is fully broken as well.
Is it?
I'll hold it.
You can swap if you want.
Like Britney. In terms of how are young people getting engaged in...
Yeah,
where's
the driving force? Is it schools, parents, friends, internet?
I think it's the bigger world, isn't it? I feel like we are starting to know, whether it's instinctively or in the back of our heads, that there are some things wrong. So for some of us, it might be a certain book that we read that could go as far back as, like, you know, if I speak to the older generation and they remember reading the female eunuch, Germaine Greer's seminal work in the 70s and having their life changed.
Yeah.
For me, it was reading Catlin Moran's How to Be a Woman, like many women of my generation and a bit above and younger.
Can I just say, how old were you when you read How to Be a Woman?
When it came out, I think I was in my like early to mid 20s,
right,
so
okay.
24, 25.
Right.
And I did suddenly think to myself, oh my goodness, I love a good panel chat and I'm interested in the word feminism, but okay, I'm definitely on a mission now.
Right.
And then the journey just began. But I think it's more than that. I think it's more than like reading a book or engaging in a Twitter conversation. I think we just know as humankind that there are some things wrong with the world. You know, whether you're talking about things such as like climate change, we know because the seasons are messed up. We know that sometimes we feel uncomfortable, you know, because there is a certain, that there's something wrong with the objectification of women. You know, that like these things that we just experience day to day can make us feel like perhaps we should question certain things. And the fact that that's happening younger is in some ways scary because it means that they're being exposed to that. But at the same time, it's also brilliant because it can be joyful and it can be amazing. And they are the leaders of the future.
Yeah, because I think now we're at a point where we all have to kind of get used to talking about all these uncomfortable things because it usually just kind of gets swept under the mat and nothing gets sorted out. You think we're edging closer towards people being able to stare these issues directly in the face.
Yeah, and that's why I decided to call my book Open, because it's about just being open about everything. Like having the conversations that are hard, having an open mind and being susceptible to the fact that we're all quite different but also the same, but someone might have an experience that you haven't experienced, and having empathy for that, having an open heart and feeling like you can love life even though sometimes it's really hard. And I think, yeah, it definitely starts with potentially uncomfortable, quite emotional conversations.
Yeah.
Amongst us all, amongst men and women. And I think I've gone sort of full circle from finding it very intense to actually finding it really fun and feeling like this sort of modern sense of togetherness is actually pretty awesome. Like, look at WOW, it's awesome. It's a Sunday, we're here together. I'm being interviewed by a man. It's so great. No, but that's so cool. Like, you know, all of these things. I love the way the world is changing. There's so many things that are, I find terrifying, but there's also things that I find brilliant.
Right, so when we talk about this uncomfortableness, and obviously the title of your book is called Open, how much of your time, so for those of you who might not know, Gemma hosts the surgery on BBC Radio 1. So it's basically an opportunity for people to call in and talk about, depending on what the topic is, if it's like bad dates, coming out, anything. It's just like a safe space. How much of your time on the surgery has prepared you for making this book?
I definitely think it's helped me. I mean, my whole time at the BBC, I've done lots of different shows on the radio, from One Extra to Radio 1. I've been there for 8 years. And I've done specialist documentaries from really serious issues like abusive relationships, but at the same time I've done Weekend Breakfast, which can be so silly, and you can just play a pop record and dance and have a real giggle with people on their way to like their Sunday swim club. So, you know, that kind of full spectrum of broadcasts that I've done and interaction with people have definitely helped be a heart of this book. And then, yeah, being on the surgery for nearly 2 years now has been an utter, a non-forgettable experience. Just that, again, that openness. Everyone always says it about the surgery. The surgery has existed for a long time. Mm. And it's not brilliant because of me. It's brilliant because of the show, you know? Mm. It's not even about, it's nothing to do with me. It's to do with the listener. And the fact that they call in at, you know, every single show, every single week with big problems and big stuff that's on their mind, all the people that get involved in the show, it's just so, only radio can do that. Only radio can make people feel like it's warm and accessible enough to talk about some of the things that they find the hardest and the most scary or the most upsetting or the thing that they really don't understand. And we root each show in a different theme. So it can be anything from Freshers Week to, you know, saying, I don't know how to deal with money and I can't cook and I'm really, really intimidated by this idea of university, to much more profound and deeper stuff like talking about power, or recently we did a show about goals, and it swings from like really serious to really fun. Like you think about goals and you think about like Instagram, like how it's just like hashtag relationship goals, hashtag body goal, you know, but that can actually really affect us. So I definitely think the surgery has influenced, and radio in general as a broadcast has influenced a lot of the love that I have for people in this book, and some of the experts that I've met. So it's not just about me, this. I really didn't even want to be on the cover of it. I didn't. I just wanted it to be glittery. I didn't want it to be about me, because it's got like over 60 people that helped me build this. I definitely was the curator. I'm quite bossy. And I really wanted it to look the way that it does. So I was like up there all the time, making sure that it takes you on the journey that I wanted it to be. But I commission people to write, you know, I've never had to come out as homosexual, for example. So I asked my friend that had to write that bit. I've interviewed people that have dealt with things that I haven't. Every single time it was a really serious issue, I would seek professional advice from an organization or an expert. There are professors in here, there are charities in here, you know, it's a really rounded piece of work.
Mm. So there was one episode, there was one episode I was listening to, and it was all about alternative dating, and I found that really interesting, because when the focus shifted to people of different races dating each other, and then even further into people of different religions, I think there was one person that was tweeting it, I'll set the scene. I was coming back from work, parked the car, and literally had 40 minutes to go, but I was like, oh, the gap between me leaving the car and going into the house, I'm going to miss about 60 seconds. So I just sat in the car with the radio on, just following the tweets, and people like, well, I shouldn't really be saying this, because if anyone in my family finds out that I'm dating someone who's not in following our particular religion, I'm going to be in trouble, but I need help. I remember seeing that, and I screenshot and I sent it to one of my friends. Said, this is insane. This trust that you've built up is fantastic. And I suppose you said you didn't want to be in the cover, but people know you from the surgery. Mm. They know this element of trust. Seeing your face on there, people are going to buy into the trust of the advice that's going to be available into the book.
Absolutely, and I'm very proud of that. It's unexpected that my career has become this. It's been a natural journey in the sense that I just have felt more and more compelled to do something like that, and I really do care about people feeling less alone in a very noisy time in a very noisy world. And I do find celebrity culture overbearing myself, even though I sort of dance within it. If people trust me, then that's great. If you buy the book and you enjoy it, that's great. But I don't, at the same time, like, there's no pressure. Like, and I think, like, celebrity culture, you know how it's always pushing certain faces to the forefront. That gives an element of pressure that you have to be like them, that you have to look like them, that you have to live a life like them. And, like, that's not the essence of what I'm trying to give. It's about, like, being you and an individual. Yeah. And also the responsibility of being this ultimate role model and someone that you can completely trust. Like, you could tell me anything. I am really non-judgmental. I've been through loads of horrible things in my life, and I can understand if you've seen darker times. But at the same time, I do loads of things wrong. I make mistakes all the time. I'm a real goof. I'm quite annoying. Yeah. So I can't be, like, heralded as, like, it's nice to be a role model, and it's something that I think is important. We all need lots of role models, but they all need to represent something different. And again, why I spoke to lots of different people within the book. Yeah.
So let's go deep into the book. We've got the book broken down into four sections, isn't it? So we have your heart, body and soul, mind, and your world and your future. Why these four categories?
Oh, because I'm so annoying to my own self, and I decided that I wanted to fit in the whole of life. And then, like, halfway through, I was like, since when did I think that I could write about the whole of life? Like, who do I think I am? But I said to the publishers that I was gonna do it, so I had to give it a go. So it's split up into your heart, your mind, your body and soul, your world and your future. And each one represents different things, and it's fully illustrated, so it's not, again, it's not just like a big old boring resource. Hold this. Oh, do you want to hold this? Yeah, go on, have a flick. If a rude bit comes up, I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. There's all sorts in there. So there's, like, little snapshots of poetry, there's interviews transcribed, there's bits that you can fill in. This is one of the first copies which hasn't got a ribbon in it, because it was, like, the first one ever to be made. But if you buy one in a bit, there's a ribbon in it so that you can mark certain sections. And yeah, it's just a massive old brick, basically. But I wanted it, again, to be personable to the reader, so to never feel like you have to read it cover to cover. Yeah. So it's got a really massive index, and I feel sorry for who had to make the index, because I definitely didn't. There might be a certain subject matter that you're intrigued about for the first time or the second time from any age perspective. It could be a parent of someone or someone who's a bit younger. And then you just find the page, and you might read at least a line that maybe can give you some advice. And if I don't give you the advice, or the person doesn't give you the advice, then we've tried to fill it with organisations and charities and places to go where you can find more specialist information. So it is a real smorgasbord. There might be some subject matters in here that will never affect you, and that you might not even, for your own mental health, want to read, because some of it is quite deep. And that's kind of fine. It's just there if you need it.
So it's almost like a resource for people that didn't know there were facilities out there that can help them for certain issues and ailments.
One of the things I realised is that I went around schools and I spoke to young people, and everybody just didn't seem like they were having, like, big conversations with their parents about what they were really worried about. And there's so many amazing people out there that want to protect you, and that would never judge you regardless of what's going on in your life, and they want to support you. And it's just about knowing that they're there and knowing how to find them.
So why do you think kids aren't having these conversations with their parents? Are we moved in society where it's quite, like, prude and, like we said before, uncomfortable to speak to your mum and dad about something, anything?
I think there's a big disconnect between generations, and I think it's because we like to categorise, don't we? Like, young people, and, like, another thing that came up recently, which I found quite offensive, was, like, the snowflake generation. I understand what it was trying to represent, but you can't just, as an older person, brandish a whole generation of people as really soft and it's just the connotations are really negative of that. You know, the reason why the younger generation are feeling really sort of vulnerable is because I don't feel like they're being spoken to or supported or protected for their needs of the modern world, which is really loud, really overwhelming, really rampant, really doom-mongery. Yeah. So it's about like kind of looking at the education system, looking at the conversations that we're having about body image, thinking about our relationships with the internet and discovering that out together, because there's not one answer, there's not one person that has it all, but we should be discussing it rather than putting so much academic pressure. Like, I went to one school and they told me about a really intense, like really worrying self-harm issue that was going on amongst their year. And the teachers wrote to me afterwards just saying like, I didn't even know that that was going on. And all the time, like grades wise, the girls, it was a girls' school, they were getting amazing grades and achieving everything that the school system wanted out of them. But and what was going on with them sort of internally and amongst their peer group was really worrying. And then, and now, you know, they're actually working and there's organizations going in and working on that specifically so that it's more about emotional well-being as well as academic pressure and academia and grades. It needs to be like a bit more all-encompassing.
It seems like one thing seems to feed the other in these situations.
Definitely.
And there's more stress and the kind of more pressure on kids to kind of find out where they want to be, what they need to do at an even earlier age. Because I don't know about everyone out in the crowd here, but I think at the age of 16, you need to, well, 15, well, 14, you pick your GCSEs, is that right? Your GCSEs almost dictate what you do for your A-levels. Your A-levels almost dictate what you do at university. And it came to a time where university kind of depicted what you do for the rest of your life. Mm. It's a huge pressure. It's a
yeah, thing. And I didn't go to university, and I got an E in my GCSE maths. And I didn't do that much homework. And that's partly because my generation wasn't being put under the same pressure. I believe in words, I believe in education, I believe in knowledge, and I think it's really good to educate yourself, to travel, to feel strong, but it's not just about grades. It doesn't mean that you should like run around the streets and never go to school, but I think it's about like, we need to be encouraging life experience, and whatever that means to an individual is really important.
So I get the vibe that there's, in places, there's pockets of people who are catering children to, not everybody needs to sit an exam to kind of be analysed and assessed of where their next step is. Mm. How do you think we can start implementing that more in this country? Sorry, well, it's a bit of a heavy question.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's Sunday, Kofi. I do think that we need to look at the education system, yeah. But I mean, I don't have that power, but maybe we do individually. Maybe we speak to our schools, or maybe we write to our MPs, and we start to think about like what's going on right now.
Right, so back to Open. Generally curious, because we have a very mixed crowd here.
Yeah, go on.
Who would you say it's for? Because some people might see that on the shelf, and like, look, guys might see it and be like, okay, that's not for me. But would you like guys to
it's kind of not, like, it's not for anyone. It's for everyone, this book. Like, it hopefully has a page that will at least make you lol. Like, if you don't necessarily connect with all the intricacies of bits in, you know, like there's so much in there, and it's female skewing because I am female and I wrote it kind of to my younger self and the young, particularly the young women that I met. But at the same time, it's for men. Like, I don't, as I said to you earlier in the dressing room, I don't understand why men don't find periods fascinating, because they are fascinating. So there's 28 pages on periods in there, including a do's and don'ts for anyone that doesn't have a period as to what they should or shouldn't say to someone that does, especially when they're having their period. So it's for everyone. And I think that we should just be interested in each other's experience, whether it's an example like periods or just the fact a different gender, or, you know, people now that are wanting to change gender and like trying to engage into why that they might want to do that and accepting that and feeling brave to be yourself. So I hope that my book is genderless. And last week on World Book Day, two young boys, and it was like a big panel of different like YA writers, and there was girls and boys in the audience, and two young boys bought my book, and I was so happy. Yeah. That they chose to buy it, and yeah, I was just like, yes, I'm, like, I want everyone to enjoy it. And it goes like older than you'd expect as well. Like, everybody wants to know where to put it in a bookshop, but age 14 plus, and it can go younger. It's just about making sure that you don't feel like you have to read all of it if it is younger, but, or maybe a parent wants to read some of it and deliver some of the information. But it also goes right up to like 200, because I learned so much from this book, and it's, some of it makes me lol, and I'm 32 next weekend, so it's got glitter on it. At least it looks nice.
But it's cool, because like, I can imagine like picking that up at like 11, 12 years old, flicking through it, and it confirming more things, you know, these kind of, the thoughts you have when you're younger, when you're trying to figure out what the opposite sex is, and it's, rather than letting the imagination run wild and hearing the rumours that you hear on the school ground, do you know what I mean? Because it's just like, this playground talk, it implants things in your head, and you think, oh, my mates are saying it, and most people are saying it en masse, so it must be true.
Yeah.
But then again, when that does happen, it's a lot of kind of, it reinforces a lot of kind of negative stereotypes, isn't it?
Well, one of the problems is that, like, our generation, it was about the playground banter, and that's where we learned some things, and then maybe there'd be, like, one film that would tell you a little bit more, or, like, one book in the library that everyone would take out, so, like, Judy Blume Forever, you know, like, it actually had SEX in it, so, wow.
There was a few laughs in the crowd when you mentioned that. There's a few readers out there.
Yeah. Actually, though, someone said to me yesterday, like, Judy Blume Forever really annoyed me. I said, why? She's like, because it made me think that I'd have to wear some sort of chastity belt when I had my period. And I was like, oh, my goodness, because it had been written in the 80s before, like, the progression of, like, of, yeah. So, you know, be careful of how things change in terms of date. Sorry, the period chat came in again. Why? But now, if you are talking about things in the playground and you're becoming naturally intrigued by life and you're thinking about SEX and what that means, because that's a part of life, then the unfortunate thing, and that's something that I can't change and none of us can change because it's happened, is that people are finding out about it in potentially damaging ways. So if you are intrigued and you're full of energy and life and you're growing up and you're excited about life and you're trying to work out some things, then if you're putting certain stuff into a search engine online, the stuff that you might click on and get back could affect you for the rest of your life and give you the wrong information. So this book and this, it's more than a book, it's more about a message. It's just about curation and working out who we want to listen to and how, and getting access to that information, because the same with body image, like if we buy a certain cookbook, it might be actually really negative to our particular dietary requirements just because somebody is telling you that their way is the only way and it's just to eat like three bunches of kale a day. Like, they weren't the expert necessarily, you know? So it's just about going on our own journey and working out like where we're getting our information from. And I think that the internet is really overwhelming us with some potentially really damaging stuff.
Because it seems like open, and I'm going back to periods again. It's like, if you get boys reading about this type of stuff and understanding what the process is, it wouldn't be blowing up to be such a kind of a huge
scary
thing.
Scary thing.
I mean? It's massive. And in few circles for some people, it's almost quite... It's almost taken as a joke, isn't it?
Mm. Which is fine. Like, humour is fun as well. Like, I quite like laughing about this stuff too, you know? Yeah. And in there, there's like a whole chapter on the... It's called... I won't read it, but if you buy it, you can read it. It's called The Worst Leak of My Life. Like, that is... And it's written in a way to make you laugh. Like, look what I dress like. I dress like a clown. Like, it's partly because I feel that it's important to represent, like, the fact that life is serious, but it shouldn't always be too serious, and that we should have fun, and that we should laugh at things too, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's good for us to have a conversation, for us to know the basics, but at the same time, God, periods are really annoying.
Like, we were talking earlier, and I shared quite an interesting, well, I say interesting, somewhat embarrassing story. I remember when my sisters went to get measured for the first time, and I think I was like, 6, 7, I didn't know what was going on, and I just asked if I could get measured as well. And we were in Marks and Spencer's, and like, and I'm talking about this to a room full of people, and like, it wasn't until a few years later when my mum and like my sister started explaining, oh, this is what's happening, because I had that quite interesting interaction that I knew what was going on with like changing bodies and stuff. But it's like, if you're not lucky enough to grow up with three older sisters, you don't know about these things, and you find these things out about from your friends and during our time from the internet, if you were lucky enough to have a 56k modem. It's scary, like where people are getting their information from.
And I just think that we should be like, you know, as a boy that didn't necessarily need to go and get a measurement for a bra, it's really, really good that you could at least have people close to you to just say, oh, what, why not, you know? Like, and it's fine to be able to have those conversations because it's just life.
Please don't tweet that. My sisters will have an absolute field day. So it sounds like you go pretty deep, pretty dark into the book. How it is called Open. What made you feel comfortable enough to think that, right, I'm putting myself out there?
I just felt like I had to be honest. Yeah. Like, there's loads and loads of different reasons why, but like having loads of conversations with young people, seeing what was going on around me, feeling how I did in my own self and my life. Like, I was becoming 30 and I was very reflective of my younger self. I just felt like I couldn't believe that this didn't already exist. It's such a weird book that actually I haven't seen many things that are similar. Someone sent me a French version, weirdly, not of my book, but of, it's like an encyclopedia for young women, and it's not been translated into English, so I can't read it. Because I can't speak French, unfortunately. But like, you know, I feel like this kind of fanzine ode to life, this dip in, dip out, it's no literary great, it's just there. Like, I felt like it was so needed that I really, really had to do it.
And like, we were talking earlier how books like these can encourage and drive discussion. It's almost going to kind of create a kind of subculture and a community within itself. Was that kind of the intention, that you wanted to create almost like a subculture?
I want this to be massive. Yeah. More than a subculture. Yeah. Like, I believe in the power of like pop culture, and that I hope that everybody like gets this and buys it for their friends and shares it with their friends or shows it to all different generations and the boys around them, and that it's in their schools and that it's just there as a resource, and that it's there like for a long time, and it can be changed, it can be adapted, it can be updated. Like, I have new ideas for it all the time. We're doing podcasts, if anyone's interested and doesn't want to spend money on the book, the podcast will be free. You can download them on iTunes. They're launching in a couple of weeks, and it's called Open Up, so you can subscribe on iTunes. We've got the bus outside. I don't know if you've seen my ridiculous yellow bus. Like, yeah, that's my bus.
Sorry, I was just like, there's a BBC one. I was like, what is going on there?
I know, and then I came in my giant yellow thing. It's like so OTT.
No, we know you're here, man. We've got the jumper, we've got the bus. It's brilliant. It all works.
But, you know, I feel like Open for me is more than a book. It's like, I want it to be a movement. It's a sentiment. It's just like, feel free to be yourself and be who you are. And that's an amazing thing.
And I suppose if your surroundings feel like that, you're more likely to feel like that.
I think so. And I think it is about togetherness, and it's about like being in the real world again. Like, the fact that you're all here is really lovely, because it's just like having a conversation where we look in each other's eyes and it's face to face. And I think that we need to be doing that a bit more. Hence the fact that I'm going on tour for a whole week. It doesn't matter how exhausted I get talking about the same things. I care enough about it to keep me going. Like, it's because I believe that it's important to get out of like London or just trying to get in a magazine feature. Like, it's about community, it's about togetherness, it's about different sorts of people in different parts of the country, and that makes us stronger together from a bigger picture perspective.
So like, different communities will respond to books like this differently based on what that community's taught.
Well, we were talking about this community, weren't we? Because like, yesterday I did the London Wow. I don't live in London anymore. I moved to Margate on the southeast coast recently, and it's made me think a lot more about community. It's a lot smaller than Hull. But just, I think that it's so important to be doing a Wow here and doing it your way, because you know like who each other are, and you know what's needed in this area, and it's really important to create change kind of from a micro level, in terms of feeling strong individually or maybe even politically, knowing like where you reside, knowing who your MP is and feeling like your voice matters. And the book talks about that as well. Just, you know, like getting to know the basics of each political party and just working out which one like moves you and works for you in your heart. And I think that comes a lot down to like who lives on your street, who is around you, how do they make you feel? Like, why did you want to come to WOW? Why do you want to challenge your brain in these conversations? Why is it important that WOW is here in Hull? What is going on around you in other cities? How can you connect with them? And how can we make everyone feel kind of more comfortable and better about the future?
And so do you hope like it inspires people to kind of form their own networks and make their own kind of commitment?
100%. It talks a lot about DIY culture and fanzines and expression, you know, being able to feel like, yeah, you are worth it without the advertisers taking that into a really cliched sentence and just making it into like, of course you are, every single one of you individually, regardless of age or gender or political stance, like you have power and you are great and you can be so many things. Like, success isn't all about career or a grade. It's about being able to have a great social life. It's about being able to disconnect digitally sometimes and look at the surroundings that you have and finding them beautiful without feeling like you need to put them online. You know, it's like so many different things.
But like you mentioned DIY culture, like it almost seems that no matter what type of kind of environment you're putting yourself into, it has to be one where you have to share the best bits online.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense? I'm like, can I say, how many people here have, can you raise your hands? You've got Facebook? Who's got Instagram? My hands went down. Twitter? Snapchat? You see, most people here have like, at least three.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do people keep up with all this stuff?
It's really hard. I think it's just like good to keep it fun. Like, sometimes if I post something, and I'm like, oh, I don't think I liked that. Then I literally have to shake it off and be like, who cares? Yeah. Like, only me. Yeah. No one else cares. Like, so, and that's such a ludicrous, you know, thought process that we've got into this rhythm where we care a bit too much about it. So I think we should kind of treat social media as to probably how it was meant to be used initially, which is just like frivolity, fun, and to promote good messages and to find your community, but not take it too seriously, because what's the most important thing is the real life. It just is. It always will be. Our real life conversations and experiences and mistakes that we make through conversation are always going to be more powerful than someone screaming at you on Twitter because you said something that you thought was really impassioned, but they don't agree with you. But have that conversation in a pub. It's going to work out better.
Like one of the greatest things, I'm diverting to the city of culture. You've obviously seen the blade outside.
Yeah.
You can't miss it. The day after, I remember being in the gym and there were these two guys chatting, and they were like huge guys, tattoos everywhere. And one of them was like, "Hey mate, have you seen that thing in town? It's mint." And then the other guy was like, "Nah mate, shouldn't be there. It's a waste of money, waste of time." And I was like, this is the first time I've ever heard people talk about what is and what isn't art in a gym locker room.
Yeah, it's cool.
And it was like, it was just nice to see that sort of thing away from, you know, the Twitter feeds. And
that's why sometimes it has to be big, right? That thing out there is huge.
Yeah.
Because it may create a reaction.
Yeah.
That's why, like, I bought a bus, because I was like, it's going to get people talking, even if they think I'm really, really annoying. But, you know, I absolutely agree with you. How wonderful that Hull is the city of culture, and that people want to talk about that and engage in that as a conversation across the UK, and that they want to have a debate in the gym, like locker room. Like, yeah, that's what it's about. Like, us debating and having a laugh and working it out together.
So we need to kind of reinforce this opportunity to get people out talking again.
Yeah, like I was at a dinner with some of my family last year, and my granddad like is no longer with us, but I was sitting next to one of his best friends, and he was being really cantankerous. This old man was like saying loads of things just to kind of jab at me and get me sort of arguing with him. It was quite fun though. So we sat there, we drank wine, and we chatted, and we were talking about the political landscape from his perspective, someone in his 80s to mine. And he just turned around to me at one point. He's like, like my granddad was a really strong-willed Glaswegian man. And he's like, "You're just like your granddad." And his friend spoke similarly to him in this really strong Scottish accent. It was just like, you're just exactly like him. You just love a debate. I was like, no, you wound me up to get this debate. But actually, it was just so fun, and I loved the idea that his best friend had completely different political views to him, but they'd been friends for years and years and years, and just always talked about it and, like, you know, talked about it all night to the bitter end, and that was their life. Because now, like, we're so full of rage and overwhelm that we can't do that anymore. Whereas I think because it's all happening online rather than face to face. And I think debate is, like, actually, like, really, really great.
So, like, what's the option then? Why aren't people wanting to talk about it face to face? Why is it, let's just leave it for online, let's leave it for the forums, let's leave it to troll people?
It's just easier, isn't it? It's easier when you're in your pajamas and you open up your laptop. It's like, oh, right, here I go.
To just start trolling people.
Well, yeah, I think there's a place for online. I do like the online world. There's lots of things I like about it, but I do think that we need to be focusing about, like, just, like, I don't know, having it out, having a chat.
So I want to go back to the book, because you mentioned before, sorry, I wrote this down before, how you spoke to a lot of different people, like, to be contributors for it. How did you pick the people? Like, how did you do the research?
It's just people that I've met along the way or found out about. Like, luckily in my career, I've met lots of awesome people. And some of them have really struck me. And when it got to a certain bit in the book, I would be like, oh, yes, yes, yes. I need to speak to Marawa, the world-famous hula hooper, in the career section. Because this woman is incredible. She actually is a successful, world-famous, record-holding hula hooper. And who in their right mind, from a young age, thinks, I can be a hula hooper as a job? She needs to be in this book.
Did she teach you anything? Because I think Henry mentioned there's going to be...
There's hoopers later, right? So that's a job. Like, how cool?
You're going to have a go, because if you swear to her.
Yeah, I'm definitely up for hooping. I wish someone had told me when I was younger that could have been my job. But it would have saved me a lot of thinking time. Like, I mean, actually, that's not right. It would have there's a lot of thinking. Actually, again, something I really, really learned from speaking to Mario, like the business element and the sort of the determination to become a world famous hula hooper. I was just like absolutely flabbergasted. It's not just about fun. It's like, it's so business as well. So. Maybe I don't want to be a world famous hula hooper, but I'll do it for fun.
Well, you've said it. We've all heard her say it, right? So you're gonna
yeah,
have to go.
Yeah, I'll do it for fun. And we've got hoops on top of the bus as well. So maybe once you've learned, we can all have a hoop on the bus. And if you do want to be put in touch with Marawa, the amazing, if you want to take it on as a job, she's on Instagram, and I'll happily introduce you. She's got lots of ways to make that happen. She's travelled the world. It's amazing.
I want to go back to how you were talking, how the book was, it's intended to be genderless.
Yeah.
Looking at kind of the state of, what is your opinion of the state of the current approach to what is masculinity? I'm throwing questions at you.
No, it's good. It's just that I can't, like, instantaneously respond without a thought, but, like, is there a particular, I can tell that there's something going on in terms of a lot of men are feeling like they have to be a certain way, and that is definitely adding to really, like, awful statistics in terms of male mental health. And when I did a film called Wow Now, which my production company produced and made for Wow a couple of years ago, and you can find it on the South Bank Centre YouTube channel, where I spoke to young women about things that affect them, and that was very much the springboard of this book. And then a year later, I went around schools and did the same with boys, and one of the main things that was coming up was them feeling like they have to fit into a certain stereotype, and that they have to be a certain way. Even really young boys saying, you know, I know that one day I'll have to be the breadwinner, that I'll have to, like, hold a family together, that I'll have to be strong. Like, the word strong kept coming up all of the time, from a more emotional perspective rather than just, like, a physical one. So I think that that's really worrying that that's still happening, you know? Like, it is 2017. Like, we can all be so many things. Like, I can be masculine and I can be feminine. You can be the same. And there are people taking steps even further to express that, whether it is, like, me wearing a suit or, you know, the trans community that's coming up so boldly and brightly and with so much to say, and we can all learn from so much. Like, Juno Dawson, who I interview in the book, is an amazing trans woman, And I just wanted to ask her because I felt like I'm not equipped with all the language to know exactly how to speak to the trans community without offending, because sometimes you feel nervous to ask questions with empathy and humility, like, because I'm interested and because I want to support this community. So I just asked her, I said, will you be open? Can I ask you loads of stuff? And she said, yeah. And then she's like, is this one from my perspective? But again, it's just like sort of self-education and being accepting to the world around us. So I think masculinity and femininity are something that we need to explore individually and work that out, what that means to ourselves, and not judge others. And we can all be so many things. And how brilliant is that? I love wearing a suit. Like, I really do. Yeah. And like, I love boys that wear makeup. Like, and they can still be masculine and straight and just awesome and still wear makeup. We should try and just shake off some of these really rigid roles and stereotypes that are just so old school. It doesn't apply to our world now. And it doesn't mean that you can't be supremely feminine if you are a woman too. Like, I love being a girl. And I like kissing boys. That's okay. Like,
and it's like, just following on from that, it's like, why does it seem to be that if you support feminism, that it seems to be an infringement on masculinity? Like, why is
I honestly don't know. I find it personally slightly ludicrous. I don't understand, like I said, how I think that men... I don't understand why men aren't fascinated by periods rather than appalled. And that is stereotyping, because not every man is. But like, just in the same way that I am surprised that there is a pushback on equality, because like, women are brilliant and so are men. And if we are all feminists and we all believe in equality, like, that means for a pretty harmonious, or like the beginnings of a harmonious time. Like, I went to Ethiopia with Oxfam a couple of years ago. And I met women in tiny villages who had been kind of empowered by learning to become beekeepers, because it's a huge trade to make honey in Ethiopia. And we're talking about tiny, tiny villages where there's no electricity, amazing people that live off the land, that are just beautiful. You know, we're talking nature personified, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been in my life. And we had a translator with us, and I was asking, you know, small communities, like, how are you feeling about these women, like, really galvanizing and cultivating, you know, a very complex tiered business system, and they're changing the face of traditionality, and they're changing the face of your communities from a very rural perspective. And all the men were like, thank goodness. They're like, she's so much better with money than me. It's great that it's at home because she can look after our newborn. We love the honey, it tastes delicious. And it's really nice that our wives and girlfriends can get together and have a mutual interest and support each other after childbirth, for example, which was just something that had happened from that. And I just thought, like, why aren't we all feeling like that? I don't understand.
Because it's like, it's down to what we were saying before, and how these communities have created this environment. And like, it's, I don't know, I'm lost for words, and how we can start to kind of cultivate that here.
It doesn't always have to be words, you know. We think a lot about things and we're trying to look for the answers all the time. It's just kind of inhabiting it, you know, like, just sort of being it, being kinder to each other. Even if we've made mistakes and made judgments before, like, that might be part of the where the world was at then. It's just about generally day to day, just thinking, like, is everything all right? Am I looking after myself, and how can I look after others? Yeah. Is there any questions in the audience?
Oh, sorry.
No.
Am I running over? I didn't even check the
No, I was so intrigued to know, because like, we're like, I love chatting, but I was wondering if anyone's got a burning desire for a question. Anyone? Everyone's gone really shy on me. No one? No. All right, carry on then.
Okay, so.
Feel free to just put your hand in the air if you want to get involved.
So I've lost where we're at now.
Sorry.
It's all right. It's on it. I haven't been keeping up with my papers. Right, okay. So, how did you manage to kind of fall into getting into with the surgery then?
Oh.
It's quite a, it's a very heavy task, isn't it? Because you think about the advice you're going to be giving out. You've got to be confident. You've got to kind of speak with conviction. Do you know what I mean? You don't want to give someone necessarily the wrong advice, but you need to know what's going on, what you're talking about.
It's a really hard show to do. Thank goodness I have a doctor. So I co-host the show with Dr. Rada. If you're a regular listener, she's awesome. Thank goodness there's someone with actual expertise. I'm just like, Dr. Rada, what do we do? I kind of act as the big sister. And to be honest, I was ready for a change. I'd done loads of documentaries across different BBC networks. I was doing early breakfast where I was getting up at 3 a.m. Monday to Friday, and I'd had enough.
Well, how long were you doing that for?
I did that for 2 years.
Wow.
I'd already done 2 years of weekend breakfast.
Right.
I did 2 years of one extra breakfast. And I was like, you know what? I fancy some sleep. Yeah. So I thought about what was the next step for me, and I realized that actually, in some ways, I'd kind of become an activist, and I use that in a very specific way, in the sense that I feel like I'm an activist for young people, in the sense that I really care about them, and I think that their issues are as important as like every adult. So it was the right step for me to take.
Does it ever dawn on you, and like how many voices you're reaching? Does that make sense?
Because yeah,
you are speaking to millions of people. You never know like what how people are going to take on your words and how much that's going to help them. It's quite scary. I think that's quite scary.
Yeah, it is obviously overwhelming, but I don't know. I am just me. Like, well, I can just do my best. It seems to work. So far, you just gotta go for it. Like, if you believe in something, then the best thing to do is to give it a really good go. I've done lots of things in the past 8 years that I never believed beyond my wildest dreams, and I challenge myself, because that's something that I love to do. And every time you do something that's a huge challenge, and you've actually just about done it just about okay, or you've done it like quite well, or you've met someone that's blown your mind, or you've laughed your head off, then you just think, that was worth it, and I'll give it another go.
Have there been any scenarios or questions where you faced, you just thought, oh no, how do I answer this, or that kind of caught you off guard a little bit?
We did a show about consent,
yeah,
which was probably the hardest show that I've ever done, because I'm not trained as an expert to talk about that on a really big platform with the amount of text that we were getting in from people who were victims of sexual violence. And we had a lawyer in the studio, and obviously the doctor, so they dealt with some of the harder stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, hand in the air, it was absolutely intensely difficult to broadcast a live talk-based radio show on something that's so universal and so scary and unfortunately so common, and again a really important conversation to have in a really safe way, which I think that we did do, and I think that like the BBC have done. They did an amazing documentary on BBC Three around the same time, so it was a springboard to that conversation. But yeah, that is so hard and so sad.
And what was the feedback on the whole about that?
It actually got reviewed for The Guardian, and the journalist said that it was a good show, but she was like, I wish Gemma could stop saying how hard it was, because it was. Yeah. I was just like, you know, it was just, I'm a human, you know, and it's really hard to hear that these things happen so much, and yes, yeah, it's really sad.
That came up into topic quite a lot yesterday on the Review the News panel, because there's been that recent judge ruling, and like in her closing argument, I don't know, have many of you guys heard about this situation where the judge said in her closing argument, when this gentleman who was put away for sexual assault, she said to the as a warning to the girls that you shouldn't be getting drunk because this will happen to you. And we spoke about this at length yesterday. And my opinion on that was, it kind of diminishes the fact that there is a rape culture out there by putting it onto the victim, and that we're still having this kind of argument saying that you cannot be leaving the responsibility solely on one person.
100%. In the book again, I interviewed a young woman who's amazing, I must say, because I don't like using the word victim, but there is a man that is in prison for violently sexually assaulting her. And I just wanted to ask her from her experience as to how we can find the language to talk to anyone that we know that's been through that, and the steps that we could take if it ever happened to us, and what she thinks about the discussion on a bigger platform. And you know, all of these things came up, and it just proves as to how important it is that we equip ourselves with the tools of even the scarier things that can happen to us out there, so that we can feel strong to know how to support not only ourselves, but others around us. And it's not about going out and getting drunk. That is not what it's about. It's about fundamentally changing up how we've objectified women and how we are looking at sex and what's right and what's wrong and what yes and what no, what's no means. And young women should be able to go out and get drunk if they want to.
Yeah. So I've noticed this on TV a little bit. I don't watch that much TV myself, but I've noticed on telly there's been a lot more advertisements about consent. There's the one with the teacup.
Yeah,
and the
that's a really good one, actually. Really, really clever advert, that. Yeah, there's some amazing conversations happening, and that's so simplistic, and it's so, like, non-intense, actually. It's just, like, this is what's yes, and this is what's no, and that's kind of universal for all ages as well, so that's a really great campaign.
I thought it was quite strange how this stuff is just appearing now.
I don't understand what's been going on.
I don't know if you guys agree that the fact that we're just seeing these things being put on television recently in the kind of in mass, or the fact that we're still having to put these things out on TV in mass.
I know, and I think it's about not looking back, because culturally, like, our world changes so much so quickly. Like a 16-year-old girl came up to me at WOW yesterday, and she was just amazing, and she was just like, how can I not be so angry about what the generations before us have done to the planet? Like, the planet is, like, in a bad place in terms of climate change now. How can I get rid of this anger? She's 16. And I was just like, well, I was in a pub recently chatting to a friend of mine who was going to therapy, and she was moaning to her therapist about her parents and about how her parents have messed her up. And the therapist said, you cannot use your modern-day intellect against your parents. And I told that to the 16-year-old, and I said, absolutely, because our parents have a lot of love for us most of the time. Some of them not, unfortunately, and that's sad, and I get that, and I can understand that. But, like, you know, there are people of authority around us that are putting a lot of love into us, and just because they're older, we cannot demonize them for that, because the world changes. It changes all of the time. Some of this stuff I might not be saying next year, in 5 years. I will always change the book and try and make it as relevant as possible. It might not connect to you, or you might not believe in everything that I do. You might not have had my experiences or know the people that I do, and that is absolutely fine. It's just about just sort of seeing what's going on around us and keeping open eyes and not blaming people.
So I'm just going to go a bit off topic, because I've got a big circle around saying not uni, because I think this is important. Because, like you said yourself, you didn't go to uni, but you're sitting here speaking to all these wonderful people. You've got a book out. I just want you to say, like, carving your own path. You need to let people out here know that you don't necessarily have to follow these rules.
Absolutely. Seriously, guys. Like, there are so many wonderful things that you can do, like hula hooping as a job. but just in terms of the path, there are so many paths out there. And use that to your excitement rather than your overwhelm. Like, there are so many ways that you can exist and live in this world. And you can listen to whatever music you want. You can wear what you want. Make sure that you're with someone that loves and respects you if you decide to be in any sort of relationship whatsoever. There's always someone out there for you that will look after you in terms of whether it's a charity, whether it's your teacher, whether it's a certain, like, group at your university. Find out what those things are if you ever need them and if you're ever feeling down. Like, your path is your path. And don't feel bad if it doesn't go exactly how you expect it. Because things change all the time, and you might feel really low one day, but then the next day you can feel amazing. And people ask me how I'm so positive, and the only way that I can be positive is because I know what it's like to feel the opposite. So I think that some people that have seen harder times or know what it's like when things are tough are actually sometimes more interesting and magic. So pick yourself back up, because mistakes happen, people make them, but actually most people have the ability to be really kind, which is such a cool fact. So good luck and have fun.
Yeah, all right, thank you.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. Thank you. And come and get the book and be part of Team Open. I'll sign it for you. I'm going to go and sit on the Waterstone stall, am I? Yeah. And if not, then just come and high five me. We've got badges. You don't have to buy the book. Subscribe to the podcast. Open up on iTunes.
tell your friends about it, get involved. Tell people about, tell me what you're doing in Hull, and I'll try and spread that message too. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Gemma.
Thank you,
no problem, I'm there. Oh, stop it, okay, wait.
Thanks, amazing.
Thank you. I'd like to apologise if anybody had anything to do at 3. I didn't realise the time. I was just so caught up in the conversation. But thank you very much for coming. That was brilliant. Thank you.
That's so fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much to Kofi and Gemma. We're now going to go straight into hula hooping. Remember the hula hooping? The lights are going to come up. If you've never hula hooped before, now is your chance. Cape Fox is still happening in the Victoria Bar, but believe me, there is no more room in there. However, imagining the future, talking with and for and by young people, is happening in the Mortimer Suite, which is through behind the marketplace where the cafe is. Imagining the future is another half hour. So imagining the future, you can just wander in. Yes, absolutely. Imagining the future is for everybody, but it's young people talking. So do go and hear what they have to say. Do have a hula hoop. Do also regather here at 3:30, and that's when we will be sharing the craft from the Revolutionary Makers workshops. There'll be a little something to take away with you. And if you haven't already, there are just a few tickets left for Viceroy's House tonight, which is the, my goodness, there's like performance art going on behind me. Brilliant. This is the stage for selfies. So speaking of selfies, if anybody's not done it already, the selfie booth just out in the hallway there with all the JZ flowers, anything is possible, is waiting for you. It's the most beautiful frame of gorgeous flowers, white, green, and purple, in symbolic of the suffragettes. Dear hula hooping, are you waiting for me to shut up so that you can get on? Right, I'll get off the stage. Right, get hula hooping. If you haven't bought your tickets to Viceroy's House, you still can. You can be back in here this evening, walking the red carpet. And that will be the end of WOW. Thank you very much for coming. Keep enjoying yourselves. Thank you.